will call in the Economy Tax Relief Division Local Sales Tax Division meeting to order. We still are one short of a quorum, I believe. We won't, as we hear some of these bills, we won't be able to put a motion up. But at least we can hear them, talk about them.
Excuse me. And hopefully have members here. I do want to thank members for their patience and their flexibility. Last Friday, we had a number of cities that had planned to come in, and North Mankato did actually make it in, and appreciate that very much, but most of them could not, so because of that, we did cancel that and postpone it to today, and I know that makes it difficult for others, so I do appreciate the flexibility, and hopefully we can get members here today. So we're going to start with House File 647, if Representative Dietrich would present her bill. And Mr. Hines, market value homestead credit. And one thing that's somewhat interesting as Representative Dietrich gets ready here is that, right now it's a market value homestead credit, but only since the 2001 legislation has it really been tied to the market value of a home. Otherwise, it was pretty much tied to the tax that you paid. So this one's somewhat unique, this animal that we're dealing with right now. And so, any comments on that, Mr. Hines, or just a little quick history of the market value homestead credit?
That's accurate.
Okay. So, a lot of times we think this has been tied to market value, but it's just been in the last 5 years that it has. So, with that, we're going to have, and we do now have a quorum with Representative Mallory. So, would you care to move your bill for approval for possible inclusion?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 647 for possible inclusion in the property tax omnibus division bill.
Thank you very much. And Representative Dietrich, present your bill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the division. House File 647 addresses one of the major issues addressing the legislature this year, which is providing permanent property tax relief to our residents. Simply stated, this bill increases the market value-based homestead credit to homeowners with the values between $76,000 and $490,000. The amount of relief declines once a home's value exceeds $381,000, and no relief is provided to homes in excess of $490,000. Under this proposal, House File 647, about 86% of the state's homeowners would receive meaningful additional property tax relief. The majority of the residents in this state would realize direct, permanent property tax relief. And I think there is something in your handouts that would indicate that. House File 647 restructures and redirects the market value-based property tax relief to those who it was originally intended to help. As market values have risen, the effectiveness of the market value credit has eroded. Currently using statewide average rates on a $76,000 home, Minnesota, or the state, pays 36% of the tax, which is a credit of about $304. By the time the home's value is $250,000, which is not unusual in this day and time, the state is only paying a little over 5% on the home, and the credit being about $147. Under this scenario, which, is, as I mentioned before, is not unusual, the homeowner's credit declines by 31%. Incomes in this price range of homes most likely, in most circumstances, have not made up for that gap. I was going to talk a little bit about how this is a common scenario, but instead what I would like to do is call up a testifier, Mary Ann Fitzsimmons, and she would like to talk a little bit as a taxpayer what her property taxes have done and how this bill would affect her.
Ms. Fitzsimmons, welcome to the division, and please state your name.
Thank you. My name is Mary Ann Razine Fitzsimmons, and please excuse me for being a little bit nervous here. It's a little bit new. I was going to talk to you today about general property values, and I was planning to bring in little props and the real estate section of yesterday's paper to show you what $250,000 will buy in the metro area nowadays, and today was recycling day, and somehow the paper ended up out there, and that might be okay since I decided I'd bring in my own property account summary and make it a little bit more personal. My husband and I bought our house 10 years ago, almost today, March 7th, 1997. We paid $176,715 for what we thought was a very nice house, and we budgeted carefully and managed our finances, and we could afford what at the time was a fairly nice house, which when I downloaded my property account summary today, as of the property tax assessment statement I anticipate receiving later this month from the county, is now valued at $318,800. My home has gone up $142,085 in 10 years, and all we've done is live in it. It was built in 1985. It has the original visibly patched 22-year-old roof on it, and we haven't put in a swimming pool or a big sunroom or a marble driveway. All we've done is live in a house in a very nice working-class mixed-income neighborhood. It's in Coon Rapids, right along the University Street corridor, if you're familiar with it. It's a nice neighborhood. It's a safe, good place to raise children, but we're not talking about executive homes here. Nothing of the sort. My home, according to the county, its value has increased $17,400 from 2006 to 2007, and the property tax bill that I anticipate getting is going to jump up accordingly. Our property tax bill has been in excess of $200 more each year for the past few years. And that is the case with people in my neighborhood as well. And my neighbors talk about this because this is coming along at the same time our health care premiums are jumping and our grocery bills are jumping and fuel costs are going up, and it's one more thing to absorb. $250,000 is not a mini mansion anymore. There was a time when that was considered a very big fancy house, but a young newlywed couple bought a house two houses down and across the street from me for $249,000 last summer, and it had been marked down a few times because that house is badly in need of repairs, three bedrooms, two baths, and some major plumbing problems, hence the markdown to $249,000 price. And all this couple is looking for is a home in a decent school district and a safe neighborhood so they can start a family. Representative Dietrich's bill is good legislation for average, ordinary homeowners, not executive salaried, high spending, want the fanciest home on the block homeowners, just ordinary people with families who, by virtue of simply owning a house, are finding that their taxes are going into the stratosphere. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Ms. Fitzsimmons, as you stated, just the fact that your market value went up $17,000 in the 1 year, even if everything else stayed the same, your taxes would go up $15.30 because you lose $9 for every $10,000 on this market value homestead credit. So everything else, you're paying more. So there is something somewhat wrong with that system of the market value homestead credit. Thank you. Representative Dietrich, any questions for Ms. Fitzsimmons? So thank you so much for being
thank
here.
Thank you for listening to me, and thank you for my patience with my
thank family. You very much. Representative Dietrich, do you have another testifier?
Yes. Mr. Carlson of the Minnesota Association of Intercounty County Men.
One of those organizations. Mr. Carlson, please proceed.
Men and women.
Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Keith Carlson. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association. And we appear here today in support of Senator Dietrich's bill. I believe a handout has been passed out or should be distributed that will contain my comments, but I'll try and project them. We support Senator Dietrich's bill for several reasons. First, as I think is fairly obvious to most of the members of the committee, is homeowner taxes have increased substantially since the enactment of the 2001 reform. Through 2006, homeowners' taxes have increased 39%, and were you to extend that out into 2007, you would find that that number is now approaching nearly 50%. We secondly support it for the reasons already enumerated by Senate Representative Dietrich, that it targets relief directly to homeowners. This next slide that I'm projecting indicates for each $1 million spent how much relief is received by homeowners. Were you to spend $1 million and increase school aid or county program aid, only about $530,000 would actually end up in relief to homeowners. The story is even worse for city local government aid for two reasons. One, because if you reside in the township, you don't receive any benefit from local government aid. Secondly, if you happen to reside in a city that does not receive city LGA, again, you don't derive any benefit. So the efficiency or the amount of relief that reaches the homeowner is even less. Only the homestead credit guarantees that for every dollar that you spend, there will be a dollar of relief to homeowners. It also addresses a significant defect in the current mechanics of the credit, and that is that it guarantees basically that homeowners will receive higher, in fact, substantially higher tax increases than practically any other property in the same jurisdiction. This occurs for two reasons. One, because the credit doesn't grow as the tax on the property grows. And thus, whenever there's a tax increase on a home, the homeowner is paying the full amount of the increase. The credit doesn't participate. But even worse, as has been enumerated by the chair, the credit declines as the value of the home goes up. So if you're so unfortunate as to own an appreciating home, not an uncommon situation in recent years, not only are you paying the increase that's due to the value and the tax rate, but you're also paying for the loss of the credit. And this is sort of illustrated on this table or this chart that's shown here. Basically, as has been said, the credit maxes out at $304 and for a $76,000 home and declines thereafter. Representative Dietrich's bill. I appreciate that. addresses that by basically keeping the credit constant. Once it reaches its $332,000 maximum for pay 2008 at about an $83,000 home and keeps it at that level until it begins to phase out for $381,000. This addresses another issue that we think is badly needs to be addressed by this legislature and simply is the inequity of the current program. If you look over on the left-hand side under the current law portion of the chart, again you see that the credit peaks at $304 for a $76,000 home. By the time you get to a $250,000 home, the credit's declined to $147, meaning the taxpayer has to pay over $150 more, even though his or her tax is more than five times greater than his $76,000 counterparts. In contrast, under Senator Representative Dietrich's bill, the credit basically is constant. It's the same as an $83,000 homeowner, and that's true for the spectrum from $83,000 to $381,000, substantially addressing the inequities of the existing program. Final thing I will point out is this provides relief to a substantial portion of homeowners, both in the Twin Cities metropolitan area as well as in greater Minnesota. About 86% of the state's homeowners would receive relief under this bill. And even in greater Minnesota, that number is over 79%. So it provides widespread tax relief throughout the geography of the state. With that, I'll conclude my comments and be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you very much, Representative Mallory.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, nobody on this bill has, nobody seems to be talking, but I thought that, as I recall going back, this market value credit had something to do with the classification switch, was it, I think, 2001.
Yeah.
And I thought $76,000, the reason that that was used was it was, wasn't that the classification cutoff for the change of rates?
Well, maybe it's a question for Mr. Hines. Would you care to answer that and the rationale and the high-level public policy behind this market value homestead credit?
Mr. Chairman, I'll take on some of that task. President Mallory is correct that prior to the 2001 tax reform, there was a lower class rate on first-tier homes, which was defined as up to $76,000. They had a class rate of 1%. And then I believe it was 1.65% for above $76,000. I could be a little bit off on that upgrade, but anyway, that was the split. And so to some extent, this credit, well, largely this credit was designed to somewhat replicate the effect of that that tier split through a credit through by going to a single classification on homes of 1%.
Well, Representative Mr. Chairman, I think that's an important point, is that when we're seeing all these things totally changing it around from what the original intent was, which was kind of a balancing when we're giving them the big class rate advantage from what they had before, and then there was this homestead credit to kind of balance that off. It was part of a deal. And now people are going to kind of come back in on that, try and get over the break the deal and take advantage one way. So I think that's got to be considered in this.
Any other, Mr. Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, if I could respond to the credits roll in 2002, the effective date of the 2001 reform was, as Mr. Hines described. But since that time, what was a $76,000 home is now substantially greater than that, depending on the jurisdiction. So it's really lost its effectiveness as providing relief for what at the time were relatively modest homes. Again, I don't think anybody could explain to your constituents why somebody who lives in a $76,000 home receives a $304 credit, and why somebody who resides in a $120,000, $150,000 home receives substantially less. And this bill is meant to address that. It's simply not performing the role that the homestead credit has historically done of providing relief for homeowners.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think, though, and I think that there's a difficult issue that we're trying to wrestle with, which is the value of a home in one district and what is considered modest is very different than another area. And it would be hard in my area for people to think that a $400,000 home is a modest home. And so the progressivity in this chart that's included in our packet is totally gone. And so that the value of the credit would be the same whether you had a $100,000 home or a $400,000 home. And that, to me, really raises issues of equity, even though I understand that a $100,000 home in certain parts of greater Minnesota might be equivalent to a $250,000 home in the metro area. And I think a challenge to us is to try and figure out how do you get, you know, comparable values in homes to be treated alike, because that modest home in one area is going to be a palace in someone else's district. And I still think that progressivity is a good approach to take. But I would be curious as to whether our staff could address the question of what percent of homeowners right now get the market value credit.
Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, I don't have figures on that at hand, but obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, most homes in the state do get the homestead credit. Right now it goes up to $414,000. The presentation of Mr. Carlson does have a chart on the back page which shows the distribution of homesteads, and you can see in sort of visually how few are over that 414 now. But it isn't so much a case, I think, of how getting any versus none. It's a case of how much.
Mr. Chair,
if Mr. I Carlson,
further respond. This proposal, Representative Dietrich's, does not substantially modify the existing progressivity of the current tax. Right now, homeowner taxes at the statewide average rate are as progressive as the state's individual income tax. With homeowners, for example, in a $350,000 home, paying a tax has an effective rate for tax as a percent of market value more than 50% greater than their $76,000 counterpart. The credit increase, even though it sounds substantial, makes a very, very small dent in that progressivity. At an effective rate of $350,000 after Senator Dietrich's proposal, they're still paying an effective rate of 1.02% opposed to their $76,000 counterpart at 72%. That's still approaching that 50% greater threshold.
Representative Mallory.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as I recall, I think $76,000 was for quite a while. It wasn't inflation indexed, as I read, and but the other thing is going from 76,000 to 381,000 as a phase out start is a lot bigger percentage, I would guess, than the inflation, at least in homes in my area, that's for sure. In fact, my area is actually, as a whole district, has actually gone down recently.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what the percent was at 2001, but only about 10% of the homes in the state are 76,000 value or less now. It's only about 150,000 out of about the 1.5 million. So I don't know what it was at one point, but it, as mentioned, the one flaw of the system is that as you could have been in a $76,000 home in 2002, and as that value has gone up to 110, 120,000, you've lost credit without anything else happening. And so even as you index some of these, and some of the bills are indexing, that is at least a step in the right direction in assuring that just because your value goes up, you kind of get a double whammy. You get more taxes because of the value going up, plus you lose that credit. So it tends to be a double hit there. But any other comments for any closing statements, Representative Dietrich?
Yes, I would like to make a couple of closing statements. First of all is that we have set our expectations very high this legislative session. We have identified property tax relief as one of our top four priorities, and we have gone so far as to even invite the public to participate in this process through our website and our hotline, which is highly admirable. Now we need to deliver, and we need to pass real meaningful property tax relief that will be noticed and appreciated by the majority of homeowners in this state. And I want to emphasize majority. House File 647 will make a difference in people's budgets. They will see more discretionary income, which is good for the economy. It will provide direct property tax relief to 86% of the homeowners in the state of Minnesota. And this type of property tax relief would give the homeowners reason to pause and to realize that we said what we were going to do. Thank you.
Representative Dietrich, thank you so much. And just for everyone's attention, you should have this in your packets. Mr. Hines has put together a graph of how all of these plans that we're going to look at, how that works out, and also with current state law. So thank you very much. At this time, the chair will lay over House File 647 for possible inclusion into the division report.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, members.
Representative Krantz, here yet? Okay, Representative Bunn, if you would, your bill doesn't have a number yet, but we're going to hear about it. Another market value homestead credit. Representative, thank you.
Does someone have an extra copy of the graph handout, the updated one today, because there wasn't one left back here? Could I have one of those in my hand? Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, good. You ready?
You may proceed.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Julie Bunn. I'm representative from House 6, District 56A. Very pleased to be before you this morning and discussing the issue of property tax in general. As we all know, as Representative Dietrich just mentioned, we had great discussion during this last year about the need for permanent property tax relief for our citizens. And we know that that will take a variety of forms in the end, including market value credit changes, school levy buybacks, LGA, even transportation funding. All of this affects our property taxes. What I'm presenting this morning in a House file to be given a number later is a little bit more modest approach. Representative Dietrich and others have taken a path of really trying to provide very extensive property tax relief through this particular mechanism, the market value homestead credit. Others may in the end may believe we have to have a more balanced package and that not as much funds may be available to be allocated toward this particular feature, the market value homestead credit. What I'm offering in this bill is a modest adjustment to what we are currently doing. Currently, up to a housing value of $76,000, you receive the top credit of $304, and then it starts to decline. So on the graph, I'm trying to see where mine fits in here in your numbers. Okay, good, you got there. Mine's not colored, so it's hard to tell. It's the change that we're addressing here in this bill is, first of all, to have a plateau area, to move that those home values that receive the top credit of $304 over to $118,000. So it would be the plateau you see at the 300 line and your graph. So moving it from the current 76 over to $118. Then it would decline as already currently in law down to a maximum amount of $456. This would address a little bit retroactively the issue, it would address the issue that over time, the $76, as mentioned by previous testimony, isn't what it used to be. The $76,000, those home values have been going up over time, and those individuals living in the same home and possibly with fairly flat incomes have been losing their credit over time as their market values decline. So having the plateau and moving it out to $118,000 addresses some of that past market value change that's been going on. In addition to this, this bill would index that value. So it would be moving over time as market values increase. So individuals living in the same home who are experiencing increases in the market value of their homes would not have their credit eroded over time just through the impact of increase in valuation. This bill essentially, bottom line, is somewhat similar to what the governor has proposed as a modest change in this area. The movement from the $76,000 to the $118,000 reflects that. But in addition, it addresses the longer-term issue of the erosion of this credit through indexing. And tries to present a proposal that may be actually affordable this session as part of a larger package of property tax initiatives. Be glad to answer any further questions on this or ask our House research staff, Steve Hines, to comment if you have further questions for him regarding this.
Any questions for Representative Bunn? Mr. Hines?
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunn, I hate to have to point this out, but the graph that you so recently gave me credit for, I see that the graph isn't really correct with regard to Representative Bunn's bill. And it shows that the flat part of the distribution under the green line under Representative Bunn's proposal, it actually is shown going out too far. Her proposal would flatten out, or would start to go down at a value of $118,000. And this shows it going out to about $150,000. And I can't explain how that happened, but just know that it should track much closer to the orange line where it goes down. I apologize for that.
Yep. Thank you.
The comments I made verbally were the correct ones, and I have a correct graph in my packet, but it got changed for today. Yeah.
So it goes up to $76,000 for a max rented for plateaus to $118,000, right. And then takes the same path down. But each year it will be indexed out, so $118,000 would maybe go to $125,000 the next
correct.
Year.
Correct. And also at the bottom edge on the zero line, currently where it ends under law at $414,000, where you no longer have any credit under this legislation, that would go up to $456,000 that you go to zero credit.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And we can't lay this over until it has a number, but we'll do that at a later meeting. So, Representative, thank you so much.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, members, we're going to move to the local option sales tax bills. We have six of them, which gives us about 10 minutes per bill. But Representative Hilty, we will hear House File 885, the Cloquet, City of Cloquet request. And Representative, if you would, we need a member to move his bill. Representative Mulry moves House File 885 for possible inclusion into the division report. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, what House File 885 provides for is to allow the City of Cloquet, subject to a local referendum, to impose a 0.5% sales tax to fund $15 million in local projects. And, Mr. Chair, this would not be our preferable option here. We bring this to you, as we have in the past, because there really aren't any alternatives. The City of Cloquet has been hit especially hard in cuts to local government aid. I believe the figure is $1.2 million over the last 4 years. And what we're attempting, and I have with me the city administrator, Mr. Brian Fritzinger, who can give you the details on the situation and what's proposed, but basically, Cloquet has been historically what's sometimes referred to as a smokestack city. We have three major industries, Sappy Paper Mill, used to be Potlatch, major employer, manufacturer of matches and other small wood products, used to be known as Diamond Brands, which is probably familiar to some of the members of the committee, and also a USG plant manufacturing ceiling tiles. These major employers are all basically in declining industries for one reason or another. And the city has attempted in a number of ways to be proactive and to try to plan for the future in as many ways as possible, anticipating further decline in these major sources of employment. That's very difficult to do any kind of economic development or to keep up with what needs to be done just to maintain the city in the absence of significant aid. Let me have our city administrator, Mr. Fritzinger, describe the projects that are proposed and give you a little more background on the situation in which we find ourselves.
Okay, Mr. Fritzinger, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Thanks for the opportunity to be here today. For those of you who have not visited Cloquet,
We are a community.
Please state your name for the
Brian Fritzinger, State Administrator, City of Cloquet. Cloquet is a town of about 11,500 in northeastern Minnesota. We're located about 20 miles south of Duluth and are considered a regional center in terms of the services that we provide the area. The proposed bill grants the city the authority to impose a local sales tax of 0.5% after voter approval of the referendum. The tax, as we estimate at this point, is about a $500,000 a year. As a regional center, we're asked to provide many services to residents that do not reside within our community. An example of that that we've talked about in the past is our library system, of which about 40% of the users of our library system are non-Cloquet residents. We have no ability through current state statutes to obtain any funds from those individuals that use that through maintenance of effort levels, through the different requirements that we have. We cannot tax people that use or assign any type of fee to those individuals. Another example in our area is in the area of ALS, ambulance, fire protection. We currently serve an area that's about three times the size of the city of Cloquet. And while those specific individuals that may use an ambulance run are paying for that service, we still need to staff, maintain buildings, etc., of which that area does not pay anything towards. So we have had a significant impact on us in terms of what we do. In addition, we're one of a handful of communities within the state that actually have are comprised of a Native American population. About a third of our community sits within the Fond du Lac Indian Reservation. We receive no property taxes from those properties within that area that are part of the reservation, nor does the band pay any sort of cash in lieu to the city for any of the services that we provide. And obviously, under federal laws, we are required to provide full services to any and all members of that community, and so very costly to us in such a large area. As Representative Hilty indicated, we've also been affected by the cuts in LGA over the last few years. We've seen our LGA reduced by about $1.2 million, down about 30% over that period of time. And even with some of the changes in that law over this last year, we again saw another reduction of $170,000 going into the 2007 year. We've adapted to that. We've cut our budget. We've changed service levels. But the region around us still demands and expects some of the services that we provide everybody. Even with increased property taxes, as we've done to try to offset that, we've only levied back about 50% of that loss. So it's very significant. And I think, as you may have heard in the past when we've been here, we are consistently one of the top five cities in terms of property tax when you measure the burdens and those levies on those. So we really do not feel at this point our ability to get back those service levels through the property tax system is the only way that we can go. We are also unique in the sense of the local option sales tax in that we are, our neighbors all have the sales tax. We're Duluth, Proctor, Hermantown, Two Harbors, all around us are the larger communities, all have sales tax right now. So our residents, when they are going to these communities and shopping and doing different things, are paying this tax to those communities, of which we receive, you know, little of that benefit from. When you look at the sales tax we're providing, we're really looking at three specific areas in our community. First is economic development. As Representative Hilty indicated, we have been a mill town forever, and times are changing. We have been working very diligently in terms of our economic development efforts, because we do provide jobs to the region. We're not just providing jobs to the people that live in our town, but because of the types of jobs that we have, people come to Cloquet from everywhere, from Virginia, in south and east and west, hour and a half they'll drive for those jobs because of the wages that they pay. But those industries have been hit hard over the last few years. Over the last 5 years, we've continued to lose employment in those industries, and our effort with our new business park, which is our first phase of this sales tax, is really an effort to diversify some of the things that we're doing, provide different types of jobs here. Second component of our bill is utilizing funds for a variety of parks projects, again, which are used not just by Cloquet residents, but residents throughout Carlton County. The St. Louis River runs through Cloquet to Lake Superior. There's been a variety of efforts through different coastal organizations to enhance that river, provide more amenities for tourism and other activities. And our hope is to, at some point, have a trail system that would go throughout that region. Probably the biggest challenge we have right now as a community is our local swimming pool, which basically after 26 years, initially was funded through lock-on monies, has failed, and as such we have had to sit back and investigate some different options that we have with the school district and others to look at some sort of new community center swimming pool facility. It is a facility that is used throughout, again, Carlton County. Many of the lakes that we have in our area have closed to swimming for a variety of reasons, and this is the central point where local youth come to participate. So it's a very important project for the city. The third and last area that we've got as part of this bill is really local infrastructure. Again, as we think about and talk about some of the effects of the loss of local government aid and other things to us, the ability that we have to enhance those utilities, infrastructure, the parts of town that are growing, we're seeing increased requests from some of the township areas around us as they continue to grow. We are one of the few counties in this part of the state that is growing right now. We have growth within our community and outside of the area. So we feel that these projects are very important to us, to Cloquet, to our residents. The Cloquet Chamber of Commerce has supported our efforts here at the Capitol and do believe this is something that they would support in going to the voters to see. And so with that, I would end and answer any questions you might have.
Any questions for the author, the testifier? I guess one question I have is on statutory requirements. It's we need a specific capital project, and I'm, you know, as I look through the bill, and I'm, you know, looking at, you know, engineering and construction of infrastructure improvements, including but not limited to storm sewer, sanitary sewer, water, and areas identified as part of the city's comprehensive land use plan. I mean, it really looks broad. What would you put on the ballot to meet the specifics of, because, you know, there's, it seems like kind of general purpose. You got parks, you got infrastructure, and yet state law says a specific project.
Right.
I mean, what are you looking at to put on the ballot, even?
Mr. Chair, what the city has indicated there, that we are in the process of finishing up a new comprehensive plan, which will be done within the next 2 months. As part of that plan, there's a very specific, identifiable list of infrastructure improvements that will be included in that for a couple areas uptown that we're seeing the demand for growth. With that ballot, those would be the areas that you would see identified as part of that.
Okay. Representative Demmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions I've got, Mr. Chair, if I could. Do you have any car dealers in your community?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes. We have a couple different car dealers in town right now. They have spoken with us in the past about the sales tax, and we have the, as part of this language, the $20 limit in terms of what that tax would be on them. And they have spoken in favor of that versus the broader half percent.
So, Mr.
Representative Demmer.
So that would be in lieu of the extra half cent then on the vehicles, and it would be limited to $20 per vehicle.
Mr. Fitzinger?
Yep.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Representative Demmer.
Regarding your LGA, you said you've been losing LGA in Cloquet. Have you identified the component and the formula that has caused your LGA to go down? Which part of it has hit on Cloquet?
Mr. Fritzinger?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I know at this point I could not identify the specific component of the formula that is doing that.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Representative Demmer.
And there are issues with the formula, I understand. There's, I think one of the things we've looked at in tax committee is, especially on the volatility, but typically there's something, and you did indicate Cloquet is growing, and I assume that has something to do with the lack of loss of LGA in that area. Another question I have, you mentioned about property taxes being high, and the local citizens kind of probably at the limit, at least as far as you can tell. That being the case, adding a sales tax is another form of putting revenue in, what's to say that that's going to be more acceptable than additional property taxes?
Mr. Fritzinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the major response that we've received from that is most of these residents are currently paying that sales tax right now, as I've indicated, when they're going to these other communities to do the different shopping and things when they're in Duluth and Hermantown, et cetera. So it's something they're already used to paying.
Yeah. Any other questions? Representative Hilsey, any closing comments?
Mr. Chair, only that I do think that the situation in which Cloquet finds itself is somewhat unique in that, as Mr. Fritzinger mentioned and I mentioned earlier, it's a town that is attempting in a lot of ways to transition between its history as a mill town and into something that is more reflective of the current economy and situations that we find ourselves in. And we could really use the help in doing that.
Thank you very much. The chair will lay over House File 885 for possible inclusion into the division report. Thank you very much, Mr. Fitzinger and
Chairman.
Representative Hilsey. Thank you much. Representative Yarles.
You guys get up to his office first.
Okay. Well, we will move to the next one. And no, we'll stick with these. So, Representative Howells, we have House File 442. And could we have someone move House File 442, please, for Representative Howells?
So moved.
Representative Dietrich moves for... To move House File 442 for possible inclusion in the division report. Representative, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know that everyone that's in prison is innocent, and everyone that comes before this committee has a very unique bill. This is not unique in the fact that the city of Emily has done everything that the House of Representatives has asked them to do. The city of Emily approached myself and former Senator Rood last session, early in session, and asked that we move a bill forward, and we requested that they first bring it to the voters. They did that, the voters passed it, and the city of Emily is now back asking to follow through with the process. They did pass their resolution. The only thing they need now, obviously, is the House of Representatives. You asked, Mr. Chairman, in the local government committee a couple of questions, and I told you that I would have the answers for those questions when I came before you. You asked what Emily's tax capacity was. It's $2.1 million. You asked me how many residents were hooked up now. The project, the wastewater treatment facility that is built and completed, was finished in October of last year, so late in the year, weather comes into play. Seven residents are now hooked up, with another 110 hopefully hooked up during this summer season by September 1st. The residential water bill is $30 for the first 3,000 gallons, then $2 for each additional 1,000. Commercial is $35 for 1,000 gallons, and then $2 for each additional 1,000. That being said, Mr. Chairman, I think the city of Emily has done everything that we've requested them to do, and I do have Mr. Kent Reese that came down from Emily this morning to testify on behalf of the bill, and also want to thank the chairman for postponing last Friday's adventure, because he was actually drove about an hour and decided he simply could not possibly make it down here, so he turned around and went home, and thank you for postponing the meeting.
Well, thank you, Representative Howells, and that you made the right decision to head back, and I do appreciate that information. You've provided it very much so. Representative Mallory.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question for the staff. Is 40 years normal on these types of situations?
Ms. Felton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mallory, 40 years would certainly be on the longer end of any that have an expiration date.
Mr. Reese, do you want to proceed?
Thank you. Chair, members. I will say that the
state your name.
My name is Kent Reese, and it's spelled R-E-E-S.
Okay.
I reside in Emily, Minnesota, and I'm a city council member. And was appointed to fill a vacancy last year. And the trip down was much more uneventful.
That's good.
Today than last week. It took me twice as long to get home. Actually, the city of Emily began this process of installing a municipal wastewater system over 7 years ago, and they had an original cost estimate of $3.2 million. A grant of $2.4 million was obtained to augment the finances of this infrastructure improvement. Crow Wing County required some upgrades in road areas where the project was located. There was some inflationary increases that always occur between bid and end, a few things that change orders, but very minimal. We had a very good system that went in with very few necessary changeovers. There was a loan of $1,637,000 was obtained from the USDA Rural Development. Emily, we always feel, is unique in the fact that it is a 36-square-mile city, which is more of a traditional township. And yes, there are other communities like that in the state, but of course, ours is unique. We are located about 35 miles northeast of the Brainerd and Baxter area, which is really sort of the center of commerce for Crow Wing County. All the residential and commercial properties have their waste treated by individual wastewater systems, septic tanks. The new wastewater system was installed in the core area and was resurfacing many of the residential and most all of the commercial properties that are available. The citizens, of course, of Emily felt 7 years ago that the infrastructure improvement was a very important step in protecting the lakes and the rivers and the groundwater of the community. And, of course, the natural resources of the area is one of the principal reasons that many of the people reside and live in Emily. And, of course, Emily is a tourist area, as I can testify to the fact that with the snow of the past two weekends, we have a lot of snowmobiles in the area using the trails in the area. As we know, the population of Minnesota is growing. And the projections are that even within Crow Wing County, 50,000 more people will occupy that in the next 23 years. This is going to put added in pressures and onto the environment and the need for infrastructure. From information that I obtained from the Department of Revenue, based upon what they had said, even with a local sales and use tax, it will still be necessary for Emily to levy a property tax. The local sales tax will nearly help in controlling the amount of the property tax increase. As Representative Howell indicated, we began the process last year, and there was a resolution passed in March of last year indicating interest in this local sales and use tax. It was on the ballot in last fall's election, and the voters approved it at that time, last November 7th. And on February 13th of this year, the City Council passed a new resolution with more detail and information in their resolution and reaffirming their position. The original design of the wastewater system was for 137 parcels. And currently, there are 84 residential and 20 commercial properties that will be connecting to the system. The revenue generated, as Representative Howell indicated, from the fees, the minimum base revenue will be $3,220 per month. This will be applied towards the operating costs, which at this point, since we're just starting the system up, we feel it will be between $2,000 and $2,500 per month of revenue from the residential and commercial properties. the loan of $1,637,000 has a monthly payment of about $7,200. This, of course, between the loan, monthly loan payment, and the revenue generated, leaves a shortfall of between $6,000 and $6,500 per month, which will need to be covered by property tax. The USDA Rural Development Loan had a very favorable interest rate by any standards of 4.37, but when you combine it with the principal and interest over the 40-year term of this loan, it totals to almost $3,500,000. So for a small community like Emily, with a tax base of just over $2.1 million, this can mean a significant increase in property taxes for just one budgeted item. From information I obtained last year from the Department of Revenue, they estimated that Emily would generate $34,000 in income from the 0.5% sales tax. Of course, this still leaves a shortfall of between $54,000 for our total payment of $88,000, which, of course, is a very significant amount for very small communities like us. We do anticipate growth within the core area of the city. In fact, one of our commercial properties shut down today for expansion and hope to open in the next 2 to 3 weeks. And there are other commercial properties in the community where we anticipate there will be growth because of the new municipal wastewater system. We also know that within the next few months, a new 8-dwelling unit housing project is going to be built. And again, it is going to be built within the municipal wastewater system. So, okay. The municipal system was actually designed to have 80 additional residential equivalents that our treatment system could manage. So,
Mr. Reese,
I want to thank you.
Yep.
And for this brief amount of information, and if you have any other questions, I'm glad to answer them to the best of my ability.
A couple of questions on that $34,000 that the revenue department had mentioned. Does that include, is that going to be net for you, or does that include, usually the Department of Revenue takes a little of that money also?
According to the sheet that I got from them, that would have been the net for the city.
Okay.
Total number, but I don't recall that number.
Any other questions? Mr. Reese, it would be about... Well, about total is about $86,000 a year for payments, it looks like. And after the $34,000, it's, like you said, about $54,000. And, if you were to even pay all of the $86,000, or take the $54,000, out of $2.1 million, that would be about a 4% tax rate increase to make up for that. And so... And I noticed in looking at your 2006 tax rate, it was relatively low. It was about 84.45. And I'm just wondering why you wouldn't want to, 4% property tax increase would raise that to about 88. Why don't you just go off the property tax rather than looking at a local sales tax? It doesn't seem like it's that... To raise that amount of money would take about 4% tax rate.
Mr. Chair, I think one of the things that when we look at trying to control property taxes, I think that's one of the key things, and this is just one tool in being able to control property taxes. I sat in on my first Truth and Taxation meeting last December. Every one of the presenters that appeared before the City Council at that time, their number one concern was increase in property values, which within the lakes areas, as you know, has risen rather significantly, and the impact on property taxes to each one of them. There is a lot of retired individuals that have moved to the Emily area, and in fact that is the projections of the demographics. When they projected demographics, is that the majority of the people moving to Crow Wing County, including the city of Emily, would be retired. Their income, of course, is based upon Social Security or whatever fixed pension or non-pension they may have. And so their number one complaint was that and the increase in property taxes. I think they're looking at one means of trying to control property taxes, and I think that is a goal that I hear this year for this legislative session, is to control property taxes and to actually put the income for the government based upon income and not on specifically on an inanimate object such as a house.
Yeah, and I think as a division here, we have to look at, you know, something like this with a 4% property tax increase in payment on your own versus the sales tax where others are going to pay for that sanitary sewer system, and some of the very same people are being hit with higher property taxes, although they might not actually live in Emily, are going to now have to pay more in a sales tax for someone else's sanitary sewer system. So that's kind of the question here as we try to, you know, see just how much of a regional significance and the need for something like that. But any other questions? Representative Howells, any
Mr.
comment?
Chairman, just to ease Representative Mullery just a little bit, it does say 40 years in there, but also says they can stop at any time when they feel they've raised enough money. And with the chairman's regard to regional significance, just remember that all the water you get, not you specifically, but most of the members of this committee get in this great city of St. Paul, comes from my district. We'd like to keep it clean for you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The chair will lay over House File 442 for possible inclusion into the division report. Thank you very much, Mr. Reese, for being here today. We will now go back to, I see Representative Yaros here, House File 134, City of Duluth.
Yeah.
Representative, would someone move his bill, please? Representative Mulry moves House File 134 for possible inclusion in the division report. Representative Yaros.
Now, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 134 would impose a 0.75 cent. I don't know why not 1 cent. I had a restaurant at one time, and I could, one of the biggest problems was finding change and figuring out the tax and so on. So I wanted a full cent, but of course I'm not the city, could be used for something else. But anyway, on bars and restaurants to match the state proposed state bonding of a new Duluth Entertainment and Convention Center arena, which will be used for UMD hockey and other events. We'll be able to attract more events and bigger events than right now. The rest of the match, in addition to the 0.75 cent sales tax, will be matched with the DEC director's fund and UMD's athletic department. So it will be three things that are going to be matching the state funding. I would appreciate your support. The people of Duluth voted 61-39%. I mean, we are tax and spenders. It's much better than that's much more fiscally responsible than borrowing and bonding and spending like it is some of my neoconservative friends. So we liberals have become the old conservatives and the new and old-fashioned liberals, which I like. The director of the deck, Dan Russell, will talk about the meat of the project.
Mr. Russell, and you have to follow that. And I'm going to ask if you can keep that to a couple minutes. We're going to try to get through all these bills, and if you could, I'd appreciate that. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, my name is Dan Russell. I'm Executive Director of the Duluth Entertainment Convention Center for the last 17 years, and I am considerably more conservative than my partner on the left here.
I hope old-fashioned conservative.
Old-fashioned conservative. Okay, I did have a chance. We prepared a piece to update this year's legislature on the DEC project, and I don't want to get into that too much, but perhaps concentrate more on the funding mechanism. And the city, Citizens of Duluth, kind of responding to Governor Plenty's challenge last year, I think overwhelmingly supported in a referendum the imposition of this tax to help fund the city's share of this project. It was a 23% turnout. It had the unanimous support of the Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors, and they actually polled their members, and 97% of the members in Duluth business community supported this tax, which was just amazing. We didn't feel, we thought it was a very fair request by the governor to say, let's see if your community supports this or not, and hopefully we went out and convinced our community in a pretty community-wide effort on its merit. The project still works. It really hasn't changed much from the presentations that we gave last year, except the cost has gone up. State Department of Finance instructed us to use a 13.9% inflation rate for construction materials and construction, and that is included in the new request to the capital investment committees. Obviously, this funding formula can work for just so long. With food and beverage tax receipts going up an average of 4% for the last 10 years and construction inflation going up close to 14%, it doesn't last forever. We do have a very strong partner in the University of Minnesota. This is a facility for their women's and men's program, replacing a 40-year-old plus facility. To put that in perspective, the St. Paul Civic Center in St. Paul, a long ago memory, and the Metropolitan Sports Center in Bloomington, both of those buildings were built considerably after ours. So they are in the oldest, smallest ice sheet facility in the WCHA, but we have a great partnership with them. They've agreed not only to continue the tradition of playing downtown and bringing everything that does to a community, but in addition, they are going to contribute over $16 million over the course of the bonds. That starts at $460,000 the first year and will escalate by 3% a year until this project is paid off. The remainder of the funds will be from additional income from the Duluth Entertainment Convention Center. And I think it's forgotten sometimes, we are a state authority. The biggest threat to the DEC, which is a state authority with four appointees by the governor, was the potential of two facilities in a very small demographic area. And we've seen what that has done all around the country and just to our neighbors very close by. The funding plan still works. It has the support of the community, which has been demonstrated. And we certainly ask for your support.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Paymar.
Mr. Russell, are you tearing down the current arena and building this in place, or is this a totally new facility that will be connected to the arena auditorium?
Mr. Chair, my old friend, Representative Paymar from Duluth days, we've taken great care of our building. We have a new roof on it. We've made a lot of changes. There's some things that we just can't do structurally to make it work anymore, but we have lots of uses for that. We typically become a hockey building from mid-September, and we hold virtually every date for hockey games, practices, and potential playoff games to the end of March. So there's very few dates that we have for other events, and basically the arena business is a winter business. So that facility will continue to operate. I guess I'm in the school that I hate to, it seems like arena business now, you get 20 years and you implode them. And I imagine with the improvements we've made to the existing arena, that we'll have that for another 40 years.
And Mr. Chair, real quickly,
Representative Paymar,
and the is some of this money going to the Great Lakes Aquarium, Mr. Russell?
Mr. Russell? No, not at all. That's just in here for some the staff included it for some legal reasons. There's an existing tax in place, a 0.5% tax, and the legislature 4 years ago used the excess proceeds from that tax to help with some of the aquarium problems. The nice thing about this tax, that tax, is that will go off the books. It does sunset in 4.5 years. So this tax on the tax will actually go down 0.5% in 2012, beginning in 2012.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Not Representative Yaros, any last comments?
Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you very much.
He's not old. He's younger.
The chair will lay over House File 134 for possible inclusion into the division report.
Thank you.
Representative Pawlowski, House File 1135, City of Winona. And I know it might have been possible for Representative Pawlowski to have been out golfing prior to the last couple of weeks, but I know now with the snow he has not been. Welcome, Representative, and would someone care to move House File 1135? Representative Loeffler moves House File 1135 for possible inclusion in the division report. Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you know, it was Ben Hogan who said you could never really go out and play until you played an entire 18 holes in your mind prior to going out. So some of us, even though we may not be actually playing, are really playing. Mr. Chair, House File 1135 is actually a continuation of a project that you approved a few years ago. The City of Winona was given the authority to have a local option sales tax. That tax was put into effect, and then, Mr. Chair, as you recall, Winona and Wilmer are the only cities to have actually stopped a local option sales tax years before they were authorized to do so. In this case, it was 2 years. That local option sales tax created an industrial park. That industrial park was the only sizable acreage of land in Winona, over 70 acres, that we could use for expansion. Prior to the creation of that park, by dredging the two lakes, taking the fill from those lakes, and then depositing them across from the hospital, we created an industrial park. Prior to that, there were only 12 acres of land that could have been improved in Winona, in the city limits, and that was non-contiguous. With the creation of that industrial park, with the subsequent improvement to the hospital, and then with adding the Winona Clinic to the hospital, we have put a great deal of strain on a major artery to Winona, the highway, and then what is Mankato Avenue. This bill would help us get to the industrial park and also to the clinic and to the hospital. So the bill is very narrowly focused, Mr. Chair. It would be solely to improve that arterial transportation network to the hospital, to the clinic, and to the industrial park. I have with me Judy Bodway from the City of Winona. She can add any details, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Bodway, thank you for being here. You would please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Judy Bodway, and I'm the Assistant City Manager of Economic Development for the City of Winona. And I'm here to testify on House File 1135. You do have a handout that identifies the project. You will see in red the proposed Louisa Street extension. Please understand that that's a new street, that there's nothing that currently exists in that area. So that would be a brand new street going in. As Representative Pawlowski so adequately informed you, we have had a good history with the local option sales tax, and we've been very frugal in our use of that sales tax. The need for the sales tax for this project does come from our Lake Winona dredging project, and the fact that we are now continuing to build and increase our business community. Just some additional information I'd like to supply to the committee is the fact that the City of Winona provides 84% of all employment for Winona County residents. In fact, we supply 20% of the employment for Buffalo County, Wisconsin residents. We are definitely a regional employment center. And not only are we an employment center, a regional employment center, but we are also the regional retail center. And so we supply 83% of all retail sales for Winona County actually occur within the city of Winona. We do have the need for safety purposes to increase access to our east end of town, which is growing. We recently had an announcement that Hal Leonard, the largest manufacturer in the world of sheet music, is going to be expanding in our new industrial park. They will be adding up to 300,000 square feet of new space in that industrial park. As they and other businesses continue to grow, we need to provide additional access. The intersection of Mankato Avenue, which is Highway 43 and 61, has the largest traffic in the city of Winona, and that intersection needs some significant improvements. One of the ways to make some improvements is to provide the second access into our retail and industrial centers, and we would like to move forward with that. I'm more than willing to answer any questions if you have those.
Thank you very much. Any questions? If not, Representative, any last comments?
No, Mr. Chair, I did read the St. Paul Pioneer Press today, and of course, this is an idea coming from the city of Winona, and then will be voted on by the citizens of Winona, just to underscore your desire to get input from citizens. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And with that, the chair will lay over House File 1135 for possible inclusion into the vision report. Thank you very much. We will now, Representative Morrow, with House File 108. And I have to say that North Mankato wins the Perseverance Award. They came in. They actually made it on Thursday night before we called this off. So I do really appreciate your tough travels and coming in and your patience as we delayed this until this morning. I do really appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We
have a motion to move House File 108. Representative Mulray moves House File 108 for possible inclusion into the division report. Representative Mulray, thank you.
Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'll be very brief. I'll turn to City Administrator Wendell Sandy of North Mankato and first to Mayor Gary Zellmer of North Mankato. The City of North Mankato has been in through this process before, but hit concerns or glitches at some point, and we're surprised to not have this approved last time. Since that time, in November 2006, 2-1, the voters passed a referendum to approve this local option sales tax. But I'll turn to Mayor Zellmer to talk more about that and other issues.
Thank you. My name is Gary Zellmer, Mayor of North Mankato, and this is very important for us in the city of North Mankato. It was so important that I was willing to sacrifice the city administrator to get up here on Thursday night.
Mayors are always willing to sacrifice the city administrator.
But I'm just going to hit a couple of the high points of our request here, and I'm going to turn it over to Wendell then to give the details. But it's really important for us to let you know that we came up here last year and presented our requests, and we learned our lessons and went back and restructured it so that we felt it would match what the House was looking for. And I think our bill very well represents what the House asked us to do. We went back, and instead of waiting, we went and asked our citizens, will you be willing to support this? And they overwhelmingly did. They said, yes, we'd be willing to support this. And for many reasons, it's just not that they're willing to spend the money in a new tax, but that the projects that we were presenting are things that they're very, very interested in. And just to give you a background of the support we've received, the Greater Mankato Area Civic and Commerce, the Commerce and Commerce Group, which is our Upper North Mankato retail group, supported it. Greater Mankato Chamber of Commerce, the Greater Mankato Economic Development, the Friends of the Library, which is the regional group that supports both the Arvid Library and the Blue Earth County Library. We received support from Nicola County and Blue Earth County boards, as well as all the local sports groups within the area. I'm just going to hit on a couple of the key ones, and the question is, you know, why can't you find some other way of paying for this? And I'll give you a couple stories. We went out and took a risk when I first became mayor to purchase some property, about 70 acres of land, that has turned into a park, one of our regional parks. And that park, we didn't have the money to do it, but it was one of those things, if you don't buy the land now, it's going to be gone, it was going to be developed. We started the park development with as little money as we had and did some basic things. And another opportunity arose next to Caswell Park, which, if you're familiar with North Mankato, is one of the premier softball facilities in the upper Midwest. We host the girls' state softball tournament, and we host a number of national tournaments at that facility. We were able to buy 12 more acres there. Again, we didn't have the money to do it. So we came up with a way of digging a new lake in Benson Park, selling that lake for stormwater holding and new developments to help pay for develop some other funding for the park, the 12 acres at Caswell. In turn, we took that dirt, moved it over to one of the local schools, and built four new soccer fields for the school system in North Mankato and Mankato. So not only now are we going to be able to bring in more teams to the softball facility, we're bringing soccer teams in the summer, and we're going to be able to develop our Benson Park and hold on to it. Unfortunately, the other solution at the time was to sell off part of the park for development. I didn't think that was something we wanted to proceed with. So this is a very, very important thing for us. It's going to help strengthen North Mankato as a regional center for summer activities. And just a mention, we've got in there development of two parks, or two lakes, and improvements in two lakes. And one of those lakes is called Spring Lake Park. It's Spring Lake. It's a Spring Lake fed lake that was an inch and a half deep when we started digging it out. It was then filled in with soot and the runoff from the rains over the many years, and also a great deposit of duck and goose stuff that we don't want to talk about. But we've already pulled out 100,000 cubic yards of waste out of there. Now we have a very vibrant, great-looking lake. And if it had not snowed the last 2 weeks now, we'd have probably finished that project up and been ready to do it. How do we do it? By pulling about $60,000 out of our budget every winter and having our staff dig it out when they weren't busy with snow plowing. So we've been very frugal in how we've approached these things. We do need this funding now to take it to the next step and really turn these into first-class facilities. With that, I'll turn it over to Wendell to give you a little more detail on our request.
Mayor Elmer, before you go on, I have a question on the projects and the ballot. Were these projects listed separately? Was it a ballot for each separate project, or was it all lumped together?
It was all lumped together on one ballot.
Okay, but all the projects...
All the projects were listed, and it was just a vote on yes or no, up or down on the entire thing.
Okay. Mr. Standy.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the ballot question was structured as you see it here with the individual projects and the dollar amounts identified. So the public was aware of the specific projects identified. But just to give you a brief overview of those projects, the first proposal is...
For about a minute or two. We're running right up against the wall, and I appreciate that. Go ahead.
Very good. I'll just give a brief summary here. The first project is $1.5 million toward the local share of a interchange project on Truck Highway 14 and County State Aid Highway 41. That's a joint project with MnDOT and with Nicollet County. Second item is $2.5 million for the development of regional parks, which include Caswell Park, Benson Park, and Spring Lake Park, as the mayor had alluded to. Third project is expansion of the North Mankato Library, and that's $750,000 to expand the facility, including the bookmobile service that we provide throughout the two-county area. The next two are Capitol Riverfront Redevelopment, which is piggyback with activities going on in the city of Mankato. Jointly, we have a program called Envision 2020, which was a community-based planning effort to identify where we wanted the communities to be in the year 2020. And then the last project is $500,000 for improvements at Spring Lake and Benson Lake. And those combined total $6 million, and the term would be 15 years or whenever those monies were generated.
Thank you. Any questions? Any final comments, Representative?
Mr. Chair, I would simply note the House file number. This is a very important issue in my area, in my district. The regional significance is such that I wanted to get this bill in right away, and that's reflected in the 108 number.
Representative Murrow, thank you so much, and testifiers, thanks for coming up again today and all your work. So, the chair lays over House File 108 for possible inclusion into the Omnibus Division Report. While we have a quorum here, if we could have approval of the February 23rd minutes. Representative Loeffler moves approval of the February 23rd, 2007 minutes discussion. Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. We now have Representative Moe, House File 1103, and we can go a few minutes over this, and we're going to hear Representative Krantz. We're going to put your bill up, and we'll give you a minute to talk about market value homestead credit, and then we're done. Representative Moe, City of Bemidji.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Loeffler moves to House File 1103 for possible inclusion into the omnibus or to the division report.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. First, I'd like to give my greetings from the city manager, the city mayor, and head of the Economic Development Commission, who all were planning on coming down on Friday, but weren't able to adjust their schedules to make it down today. This is House File 1103, an extension of the currently existing Bemidji City Local Option Sales Tax. The sales tax was passed by the voters of the City of Bemidji in this past November for the purpose of building a regional event center for conventions, regional events, and being the home to Division I hockey for Bemidji State University men's and women's. The project has wide regional support. The group organizing it and the City of Bemidji have letters of recommendation from the surrounding counties, every town and city within the region, all supporting the project. They realize Bemidji, again, being the regional center, north central Minnesota, the economy there is important and intertwined with all the surrounding communities, and they support this project strongly. And this would provide the region with an event center opportunity that doesn't exist north of St. Cloud or anywhere between Duluth and Grand Forks. So there's a large geographic void for a regional event center of this kind. The legislature last year approved and the governor signed planning money of $3 million, so out of the bonding bill. So we as a state have already committed significant resources to this project. But the City of Bemidji and the region need to shoulder the majority of the cost. And we have committed to paying 60% of the total cost of the project, estimated to be a maximum of $50 million, hopefully less, including all infrastructure and everything. But that's the maximum that they have set up for the project. We will pay the remainder of that with the 60% of the local option sales tax should we get approval from the legislature. And again, then we will be coming back to the legislature next year for the remainder of the bonding dollars, which has pretty strong support. The governor also supports the project. You can see there's strong economic impact. We have a lot of information to back that up too. But I think I will stand for questions at this time, since I know you want to get out of here.
Any questions for Representative Moe? And it is interesting to note that back in 1998, the City of Bemidji did receive this approval for 1% actually at that time, but then the referendum was never held and the authority expired, so this isn't the first attempt.
Yeah, it's a continued effort. And again, this is also a state facility. Bemidji State University is a state entity, and they need a facility of this kind to stay in Division I hockey. But the city and the region are willing to shoulder the majority of the cost also.
All right. Thank you, Representative Moe. At this time, the chair will lay over House File 1103 for possible inclusion into the division report. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're going to hear from Representative Krantz and Representative Loeffler before you go. We're going to put this in the motion here.
Okay.
And so, Representative Krantz, if you would, we're going to go back to House File 1419. It's Market Value Homestead Credit. And Representative Loeffler moves to include that into the final division report.
Thanks, Chair. I think, and committee, I think for the record it's 1491. I think you said 1419.
What did
I just
say?
It's 1491.
I'm sorry.
Right.
Very good. So we moved 1491 into possible inclusion. Very good.
Thank you. And I think you may have heard testimony in another related matters earlier today, and I had an event in my community this morning, sorry. But basically this adjusts by a county basis for the market value homestead credit and the agricultural credits, and it addresses some of the needs that a lot of your residents who have maybe older homes and the value went up. If the index is at a flat rate, you know, it doesn't move with the market. So this is basically attempts to do that. I know you're on a short schedule. However, I do have to tell you that I enjoyed hearing the comments as a former high school hockey coach and softball coach, you know, talking about the deck and talking about Bemidji State and the softball complex in Mankato. It was wonderful. So I might put in for this committee next time. but I'll stand for any questions on this. If you have, I think you probably heard testimony about it. I don't want to belabor your time right now, and I appreciate you squeezing me in.
Any questions? Also, everyone needs to remember that all of the cuts that occurred for 4 years to those 103 cities, basically, that do not receive local government aid, there was a market value homestead cuts of about $17 million. Those are all restored this year because it sunsets and that. So, I mean, all of that money comes back, and so by doing nothing, that's restored. But just those cities should know they're getting that back this year. All right, the chair will lay over House File 1491 for possible inclusion in the division report. Members, we have all sorts of meetings coming up. Watch your schedule, and thank you for your flexibility. We are adjourned.